Welcome back to Start Kyle Orton.
Victory, I'm Travis. Victory, Start Kyle Orton. Our victory fourth in is a here. Row for the first time in the history of the Scottcast. Four.
I thought you were going to say the history of the franchise. I was like,
four.
I'm
well, I guess not the history. I guess I'd have to go back to Scottcast version 1.0. I'm sure we had a four-game win streak somewhere in there, but yeah, the Bears have won four in a row, folks.
Hell yeah,
won four in a row. Everything's wonderful. Nobody's mad about anything. It was a perfect.
All Bears fans have come together in harmony to celebrate this.
Bears, yeah. No, it's all right. So, I Travis specifically, and with very good reason,
yeah,
is like, goddamn, you motherfuckers. Can we talk about anything other than the quarterback having an off day after we've won four games in a row? And I respect that for Travis. So here's what I'm going to say. We're just going to talk about, let's talk about Caleb Williams up front. Let's get the Caleb Williams part out. We'll get it. Let's try to do it in a tight five or less than that. Let's just try to get. So here's the thing about Caleb Williams' day, guys. And I got pretty, I got aggravated on Sunday too, because the accuracy remains frustrating. And I'm not going to tell you guys not to be frustrated when your quarterback misses throws. It's just like when a baseball, just like in baseball, when your guy's striking out at sliders outside the zone, you're just like it fires all the receptors in your brain and just makes you white hot angry. I saw people wanting him benched. I saw people comparing him to Mitch Trubisky. Well, it's like I get it. Here's the thing though, just like against Washington, I go back, I look at the tape, and that's one thing I have really tried to work on over the years, and I got on a guy on Twitter for not doing this. I don't really tweet out shit about like what I think happened for sure with a guy until I've watched the All-22. I really don't, because I saw there was a guy I went after because he was like, Caleb regressed. He fell back on his bad habits. He was holding the ball too long. He was passing up open receivers. He was – and I was like, I don't know that you can say that when you can't even see the safeties on broadcast view. So I got to go back and look. And I went, and I did not see maybe one time with DeAndre Swift in the red zone. It was a second window throw he could have made, in my opinion, to DeAndre in structure. And I think, unfortunately, it was one of those plays where the pocket was getting pushed in a little bit, and Caleb just physically not can't see it in the Justin Fields way, where he's just not seeing the field. It was a can't see it in the Caleb is 6'1" way, where I don't think he saw Swift coming back across very well, and so he went to extend. But I watched it, and every time he fled the pocket, he was being pressured. He was not fleeing clean pockets. And it's not updated for this week's game, but there was a really nice chart that I pulled up, or that I saw last week that I shared, that was like Caleb. It had. How often quarterbacks are leaving the pocket this year and why they're leaving. And when it comes to bail rate, which is literally just how often you're leaving a clean pocket for no reason, Caleb's bail rate this year was like, so far as like 18%, which was, I think I counted down, was like 17th in the NFL. He's not fleeing clean pockets excessively. He's not going, and this is something we talked about all the way back to when he was at college. I pulled up the numbers for clean pocket scramble right then, and I was like, the perception of him is not the reality. And so he wasn't fleeing clean pockets unnecessarily. He extended a couple times. And yeah, it's frustrating because this is a guy who's known for throwing accurate balls on the run after extending. And he missed three of them in this game. Yeah. Three out of structure throws. He missed three. That's aggravating. He also hit two that Rome Odunze should have fucking caught and didn't. And we'll talk about Rome here in a minute too, because we've had our jokes, especially in the Discord, about our contested catch king. But like, it's getting kind of annoying at this part, Rome. Like, you have to be able to start bringing in some of these footballs when you're being contacted. Like, have some grip strength, brother. It's getting frustrating.
He's over at this. I haven't seen one this year.
It's been rough. Anyways. But yeah, no, it's the same as last week. I look at the process and I'm just like, no, he's still making the right reads. He's still doing everything great at the line of scrimmage. You don't run for as many yards as the Bears have run in the last 2 weeks, guys, in this system without Caleb getting them into the right looks at the line of scrimmage. And you can hear it on the field mic every single game. You hear him yelling, kill, kill, kill. Like, that's him getting them into the right play.
Yep.
So it's not something that's perceived on the stat sheet. It's not something that's going to go into the PFF grade. But like that, when people are like, oh, it's the running game's carrying him, right? He's part of that. He is. And also, the other reason that the running game's been so successful the last 2 weeks is that Dan Quinn and Brandon Staley both sold out hard with zones to take away the middle of the field because they didn't want to give Caleb and Ben those high-low concepts, those crossing routes over the middle of the field that they had been killing people with up until then. And so that's why you don't see a ton of the explosives in those areas that you've been getting early in the season. But what was? But there's a cost to that. Like, it doesn't come, like, those defenses didn't just, okay, we took away the three routes that Caleb's really been having success with. Now everything's dead. Everything's doomed. No. Ben Johnson was like, that's cool. We'll just run off tackle until you die. And that's what they did. They run for 450 fucking yards the last two games. Like, sure, the defenses are selling out. Like, that is what is called respect for your quarterback. We haven't seen it a lot, but they are playing light boxes. The Saints played a ton of nickel. They were playing cover four and cover six all game long. They were sitting. And Ben Johnson, a lot of coaches nowadays really don't have the patience to just stick with the run game. But Ben Johnson's like, cool, if that's what you're going to do, I'm just going to run it down your fucking throat. I will do it all day long. I won't get impatient. You'll break before I do. You'll lose patience before I do. And that's what they did. So you got to give Caleb credit for that stuff too. And again, the interception even. People are like, oh, he stared him down and this and that. And it's really interesting. I was literally just listening to Kurt Warner on The Score before this. Because every week, it's been interesting to hear Kurt talking about Caleb every week on The Score. Because last year, Kurt was kind of a downer in Bears circles because he said stuff like, I don't know that Caleb was quite ready. I think Caleb would have been a guy who benefited from sitting a little bit. And he would say, like, when he was watching the Jaguars game, you know, he pissed everybody off because he'd be like, yeah, the results are awesome. I still think fundamentally the structure of this offense is bad. I think they're not going to be able to sustain this. And he was right. Bears fans got mad, but he was right. So every week I kind of do my own review and then I hear Kurt Warner and a lot of what he's saying is the same stuff I'm feeling where he's like, yeah, it's maybe the stat sheet's not what you want. And, you know, the accuracy, he's like, but at the same time, the accuracy issues are coming from he's trying to learn how to do this footwork. He's trying to do all this stuff he's never been asked to do before. And he's growing every week at it. And his control at the line of scrimmage is awesome. And I'm looking at his eyes and all that. And it's all good. And he talked about the interception, too. And it had the same thought I was, which is Caleb drops back. He throws it with good anticipation. You're not really reading. You're not supposed to look off. There's not really that many plays in reality where you're supposed to, like, be darting your eyes around to fool that he's just reading the safety. There is a window there to roam. It's all coming back to accuracy right now. If he puts that ball farther to the sideline instead of leaving it inside a little bit where the corner has a play, Rome might have a chance at it. There's a window there. But just like last week in broadcast time, you see him running around, you see him doing that. It feels bad. Like, it feels like there's gotta be, but then you watch and it's like, no, Brandon Staley sat in some fucking soft ass zones and there just wasn't a whole lot there. And, you know, he did what he mostly did well from a process standpoint. He just missed some throws that he doesn't usually miss. And I wish I knew when the accuracy was going to fall into line. I do believe it will eventually improve. I really do. We've hammered over and over again just how similar Jared Goff looked in the first half of 2022, his first year with Ben. I was looking today. I even pulled up because like the box score stats are fairly similar. First half 2022 for Goff, first half 2025 so far for Caleb. The EPA CPOA OE is similar first half. I even looked at the PFF grades just to see, and like even the because like, you know, the whole point of PFF grades, they're not super successful at this in my opinion, but they try to say like, okay, well, even if the results aren't good, is the grade good? And so I was like, well, did Jared Goff have like a 90 PFF grade during this window in time, even when his box score stats were bad? Like, was Jared Goff doing noticeably better according to film watchers than Caleb? No, they had basically identical PFF grades even to this point. Like, it's just this offense has a lot of moving parts and everyone's using it. And it wasn't all Caleb again, because there's a play, the play where Caleb doinks the football off the corner's face mask in the red zone. That looks really silly when you watch it live. And I get why people are like, what the fuck was he even looking at? And it goes down as an off target throw and all this stuff that everyone's freaking out about Caleb. But I talked to several different people I trust, people that know that playbook, know that offense. I had the same thought. Robert Schmitz used to do work for Windy City Gridiron, used to do some really good film breaks down. He had the same reaction I did. And it was telling us, he was like, I'm pretty sure that DJ's supposed to widen that out, run a skinny post there. And it's actually really cool that Caleb, as he was dropping back, saw that Loveland, who's supposed to be the primary on that play, was going to get jammed and tried to fit in that ball before the safety could come down, and DJ just never got his head around. And I was like, yeah, I think that's what happened too. Confirm with a bunch of different people. Yeah, that like it's actually really good process by Caleb there, that as he's dropping back, he sees he's actually changing the progression mid drop back because of what he's seeing. And he fires that ball in before the safety has a chance to make a play on it. It just looks really stupid because DJ doesn't feel it. DJ doesn't run the skinny post he's supposed to run there. He never turns around for the ball. But like those are the kinds of things it's hard to know if you don't know what you're looking for. But he's the process is still sound. I do still believe this eventually clicks and takes off. I really do. So I know people God, you'd be around enough Bears fans, it almost feels like a loss because, like, is it really even a win if a quarterback doesn't play well? How many times have we seen teams win games with mediocre quarterback play and it doesn't matter? And I get that, but, like, I don't think this is the quarterback. I still don't, just like we talked about last week, I don't think this is the quarterback play you're going to get all year long. Travis's animals and his house of horror, they're all going off as usual.
My child's going outside late at night.
The menagerie. Oh, okay. Well...
Yeah. Okay. 11 minutes. When that's he said he would go five, that's fantastic.
Same as a tight five.
Here's the deal with Caleb. I've said the same thing from the beginning of the season. This should take 8 games. We kind of have an agreement here. That 9th game is the revenge matchup against Minnesota. You know, if Caleb looks like booty in that game, at that point, I will worry with you, right? If he goes past where Goff was. I still think, you know, Goff was a veteran at that point and Caleb's not. Maybe there are some excuses left, but I will be frustrated. At this point, if I could just boil everything you just said down to one thing, this is a timing-based offense. Luckily, you know, we've been doing this podcast now for 2.5 years since we came back. And it's funny because when we would talk about Justin Fields and we would say, it sucks. They don't tie his footwork to the timing of the offense, to anything. In fact, you know, we had Getsy coming out and saying, I don't really care. He can do whatever he wants there. And we were like, this is abhorrent, you know, for an NFL offensive coordinator.
And Waldron more or less said the same thing last year. He was like, yeah, that's not footwork tied to the... And that's
You know, from what we heard, he just kind of bought into the Caleb hype. And he said, well, I'm going to do whatever Caleb wants. And Caleb... As we all know about Lincoln Riley, he doesn't
shotgun spread. Yeah, I think that's when people compare him to Jaden Daniels and they compare it. Like, there are, when you look at quarterbacks who've had success kind of early on in their careers in this era of the modern development, most of them are in that kind of spread air raid style. It's pitch and catch. It's grip it and rip it. Which is not to say that it's like a gimmick. It's a valid style of offense. I mean, we've seen the Eagles get very far with Jalen Hurts running that same kind of offense. It's just it's a different style. I think there are more answers to that kind of offense than there are with Ben Johnson. I mean, we've seen that when Ben Johnson's offense is fully implemented, there basically are no answers to it. And that's, you know, that's kind of why you're seeing this resurgence in guys like Ben Johnson and with the Shanahan guys, not just doing under center play action like they've been doing, but just doing straight up under center again. We're getting tons of 5-step drop, 7-step drop concepts from just like in the ye olden days. Like Mike Martz, the spirit of Mike Martz lives on, like, because the NFL is cyclical. All this stuff comes back around. These are the answers that people are coming up with to what defenses are showing, because these were the answers that they had when defenses looked like this 20 years ago. And then defenses change to adjust. It's never ending.
Yeah. To put a pin in the Caleb stuff and move on to the rest of the team. This is a difficult thing to learn, especially when you've had so much success as Caleb has not doing it. Right. Yeah. And the cadence has disrupted everybody on the offense at some point this season. They're all learning. They're all coming together. Caleb is fast sometimes, he's slow other times, and I, you know, when I see him being inaccurate, for the most part, I don't see a guy who's, like, missing, you know, not inaccurate in the way that Jonathan Quinn is. He's inaccurate in that he is trying to time these throws and these routes to where his feet are, and sometimes his brain is moving too fast, he gets the ball out too fast. Sometimes, in this game, his brain moved a little bit too slow, and he got it out late, which to me, honestly, feels like improvement, because I think he's trying to find this rhythm. Maybe he won't work out. I don't want to say it's going to work out in the end, but he is still learning at this point, and this is difficult. We knew there would be struggles, and I'm just glad that this particular game is what a bad game looks like for these Bears.
Well, and again, and it's you know, it's where the Bears, like, Bears fans tend to lack a broader perspective, because, like, this is what it has looked like development wise for a lot of quarterbacks, like, yeah, good ones even. But Bears fans, I think, have a very, and I mean, you don't really have, you got to be kind of freaks like us to watch everybody every week to try to get into, like, Bears fans, you know, you just watch the Bears. And so when you see a guy who's maybe a tick late on a read, that's actually very normal. It's very normal for young players. But you see a guy that's a tick late on a read and everyone's like, oh, fuck, he's Justin Fields again. You see a guy overthrow a guy because his timing's off and it's like, oh, fuck, it's Mitch Trubisky again. But, like, there are actually a lot of different outcomes out there that are not Justin Fields and Mitch Trubisky, guys. Like, there just are. So just broaden your horizons a little bit, but, and just be patient. He's not nothing. Again, you and I keep harping for this. We always have when it comes to quarterbacks at this stage of the game. And I know there are guys who are playing better, and I know there are guys who are playing worse at similar stages in there, but, like, guys develop at different speeds. Guys are in different situations. Nothing historically concerning has happened until we get to the end of this year and we have a below average quarterback. And guess what? Right now, by my favorite metric, adjusted net yards per attempt, he's still above average. He is the 13th best quarterback in the NFL by adjusted net yards per attempt. They are 12th, I believe, in team passing yards per game. This is for all the, and I know people want to just assign all of that to Ben Johnson. All the good stuff right now is Ben Johnson, and Caleb's fucking up his part. And that's fine, because guess what? Ben Johnson's not going anywhere. He's going to have Ben Johnson the whole time. But, like, yeah, we're nowhere near there yet. We are nowhere.
Yeah, near and look, there. We're living in the season of Sam Darnold and Daniel Jones and Baker Mayfield MVP candidates, right? Yeah. So, like, let's get back into the frame of mind, and I hate to repeat this every episode, but, like, let's return
when we used to let times guys
when we used to let guys develop as quarterbacks. Let's let that happen. But hey, you talked about Ben Johnson, and I was being very optimistic that, and I just kept telling people, like, please be happy with we have right now, right?
Before we get to Ben, because it's time to gush about Ben a little bit, but I want to just get a few more of the bad things, the few remaining bad things I wanted to say out of the way before we spend the rest of the time.
You fucking love negativity.
I do. Spit well, it. We already talked about one a little bit. Rome.
Rome,
you got to start making those contested catches. We'll just leave it there. Theo Benedict, that was still some great stuff as a run blocker. That was a rough day at the office in pass pro for Theo. Yes. I mean, that batted pass where Chase Young just zoomed by him.
We had William Barnwell, Barnabas III, out there on ESPN. Like, why don't they just trade Braxton Jones for defensive end help? Slow your fucking roll on this random Canadian who we pulled in, who missed all of last year with an injury. We need offensive linemen. They always get hurt.
Yeah.
Theo Benedict is not the long-term answer at left tackle, but he's very cool run blocking right now.
Yeah, like, I'm hoping he – I think with Theo, the hope, honestly, maybe is that he buys them enough time to get Ozzie ready to actually play that spot at some point. But, yeah, I don't think he's our long-term answer at left tackle necessarily. It was a rough – good day as a run blocker.
We've done this expectations thing before. With offensive lineman guys, and that got a couple guys onto the worst Bears of all time bracket last time. Yeah. So chill out. All right.
The next thing I got under the bad, and it's the only bad thing because I thought he otherwise was maybe the best player on the field for the offense in this game. Drew Dahlman. What were those fucking snaps? What was that? And that's like the third time that he's or fourth time that there's been bad snaps this season. So that was a little frustrating. But otherwise, Drew Dahlman, holy shit, man. Did you see him pulling on some of those run blocks? That guy.
Played great.
Scouts love to use the term hat speed. There was fucking hat speed there.
And
man.
Dahlman came out. He protected his quarterback. He said, those are all on me. And then Ben Johnson came out later in the week. He was like, no, that was on Caleb. It does sound like the snap issues may have been more with Caleb, but it's nice to have offensive linemen who will go to bat for their quarterback and be like, you shitty media assholes, leave him alone.
Well, and I think the truth is there's probably a little bit of responsibility to both. And Ben Johnson, I think, is continually setting the standard for Caleb that, like, if you want to be the guy you want to be, it's all on you. And to be fair, Caleb in his presser immediately fell on his sword for Dahlman too. He was like, yes. No, that was 100% on me. So they all said what they were supposed to say at that
we're
situation.
Saying
so
the right things in the media. The right...
Okay, and then the last thing I gotta say in the bad, I hope Tyreek Stevenson is okay. Please, God, show us mercy on these fucking secondary injuries. Jesus Christ.
We had, like, the deepest secondary in the NFL, and we are testing that theory now, Kyle.
We finally got Kyler back. The defense is finally rounded into shape, really healthy, and then Tyreek goes down. It does sound, knock on wood, Ben said he was more day-to-day, week-to-week. Hopefully more day-to-day than week-to-week. We'll have to see what the injury report shows tomorrow. But yeah, knock on wood, need guys to stay healthy in the secondary.
What a horrible tragedy it would be for Tyreek at this point to go down with some kind of injury, because he has been playing out of his mind. Except one snap each the last two games, he has had a bad snap. Every other snap in the game.
And you know what? And some of that's not even Tyreek. Some of that's just how Dennis Allen, like, you're going to you can't take the risks that Dennis Allen takes. And we've seen the payoff with what the risk Dennis Allen takes in the last couple. I mean, 15 turnovers, like that's what happens when you play as aggressively as he does. But the downside is that, you know, when you're sitting there going, how did Olave get that wide ass open? It's like, well, because Chris Olave is very fast and he was single covered and the leverage was bad. That's going to happen sometimes.
If you run a double move on a Dennis Allen outside corner, there's a decent chance he's going to get open. The hope from Dennis is just that you're going to be sacked by then, or, you know, we're going to get an interception. If that was a single move, it was a hitch. So that's the way it is.
So anyway, so now we're moving on to the good stuff, and there's a lot of it. There's a lot to talk about because the team is not just the quarterback.
Let's lay it out. The Bears beat the pants off the Saints. They led the entire way. They were never in, like, serious danger. Maybe in, like, Bears danger. We as Bears fans hated it.
There was definitely some pants shitting when it became 20-14.
They were in control the whole game, dominated in all phases. The pass game wasn't quite up to snuff, but we can't say the offense wasn't, because our head coach is legit, Kyle. And I think we should start by celebrating, because to me, on game day, what I saw in the chat and what I saw from the vibes of Bears fans overall, it seems to be that Bears fans understand on a subliminal level that we have finally actually gotten a head coaching hire completely right. But we kind of moved on from it immediately so we could kvetch about Caleb. We could worry about if we have the quarterback. But if we have the head coach, a lot of that doesn't really matter, because you can just trust this head coach to do his job, to develop Caleb. And, you know, if in the end Caleb busts and he's not the right guy, we've seen what a Kyle Shanahan can do in San Francisco. We've seen what Sean McVay can do in Los Angeles. You know, we've seen what a great offensive head coach can do with, you know, whatever he finds, the spare parts that he has. You want that coach, right? And God, it looks for all the world like we've got that coach in Ben Johnson.
Well, and again, does Caleb have work left to do? Is this still a work in progress? But I mean, who do you trust more with the work that needs to be done here than Ben Johnson?
Yeah.
Like, we're in that spot, guys. This is every young quarterback that you've ever watched struggle in Chicago and thought, God, if he just had one of those guys to work with him, he could be. We have one of those guys. We have that guy. It just give it time. But just the ability to, the ability to go from the NFL's worst run game through 4 weeks to easily the best over the last two, to just go into the lab on the bye. Like, when have we ever fucking seen that in Bears history? A guy who is able to take something that's that big of a weakness and turn it into a strength, just by getting back into the lab and be like, you know what, we need to tweak this, this, and this, and make one substitution on the offensive line, and we're boom.
Yeah.
And also, just to credit Ben, with his choice of coordinator hire. You know, I talk about this mostly with defensive head coaches and how it drives me insane that you get defensive head coaches and they hire offensive coordinators who run the same kind of offense that they would actually love to face. Where, like, they go after the offensive coordinators who make life easy on them, where it's like, you got Dick Geron, and he goes after John Shoup, who Dick Geron would smother. Like, you get – so then you have Ben Johnson, who's like, what kind of defense do I have the most trouble going up against? What kind of defense – because Ben Johnson is a guy who loves to beat the shit out of the Matt Eberfluses of the world. He loves your bend but don't break defense. He's going to just bend you the whole time. He'll be like, no, you'll break. You'll break, but that's fine. We'll do a lot of bending first. That's fine. You want me to take what you give me? Trust me, I will. Ben loves those guys. So he didn't go out and I didn't hire some Eberflus, soft zone, Sean McDermott. Ben likes aggression. Ben likes using your strengths against you. Ben likes that kind of guy. And so he hires Dennis Allen. And I thought it was really funny going into that game. And I can't remember if I said it on the podcast last week. I know I said it to you just in conversation. I was like, it's very funny to me that everyone's focusing on the angle of Spencer Rattler wants revenge on Caleb Williams. Caleb Williams, Spencer Rattler face off. And I was like, everyone is ignoring that the actual revenge angle here is Dennis Allen, one of America's favorite sicko defensive coordinators, against the team that fired him.
Yeah.
There's going to be some fucking fireworks here. And there were.
Yeah, absolutely fun game from Dennis. The other benefit about Dennis Allen, if we think long term, this is a guy who's had two head coaching jobs. I thought did pretty well at both, but he's been through twice now. He is not a guy who's going to get poached soon.
Yeah, he's specs. He's going to be here forever.
He is here. This is the Rod Marinelli, like, you've been rejected enough now to where this is what you do. You're a great defensive coordinator. There's a chance that this lineup, Declan Doyle, I think is probably going to be gone in a couple of years. I think what Ben and him are doing are trying to take him up for another job. But I like Ben here and Dennis Allen here feels like a Bears lineup we're going to see for a long time. Yeah. And that's very exciting.
Yeah, and also, Dennis Allen is developed. Tell you what, it's really funny that every week we get more and more evidence of just how bad Matt Eberflus was at this, especially at the stuff that was supposed to be Matt Eberflus's specialty, the defensive players, because this man has Scott Cast punching bag, Dominique Robinson. He's a fucking player right now, dude.
Yeah.
He was, I can't remember, I didn't look after this game, but going into the Saints game, he was, 11th in pass rush win rate?
Yeah.
Dominique Robinson, the Saint. I was like, that Dominique Robinson?
Yeah.
He's a fucking player right now.
His snap count, I want to go and make sure, but it almost doubled, I believe.
Yeah,
and
no,
he had a low usage rate, but he was doing really well with it.
He keeps earning more opportunities.
Before this.
It was funny, I think this game, have Austin.
Usually if you double a usage rate on a guy, you know, the efficacy goes down a bit because, you know, you see an edge rusher, and you talked about Bryce Huff for a little while, and he was used in a limited capacity, and
who's
he
back
excelled
to be used
at that.
Who's back to being used in a limited capacity now by the 49ers and doing a great fucking job.
Right.
The Eagles just turned him into a starter and it wasn't there.
Yeah, and you expect that for some guys. You know, if you're going to play every down, you're going to play Montez Sweat snaps, the 75% of snaps. You expect to see that efficacy drop. With Dom Rob in this game, it did not. He was all over the field. He is so ever-present on the field. You know where he is at all times. He's maybe the most standout guy on this defensive line. You're just like, holy shit, there's Dom Rob again. He's in the backfield. I have to give him his props. I have to keep giving him his props because I was so ready to put him on that list for our next Bad Bears tournament. And it turns out we have a defensive guy now who's good at developing this defensive talent. And now I might have to send a fruit basket to Ryan Poles because apparently King Poles is drafting guys who actually might work. And
I'm not giving Poles shit until this season is done and we've seen how this holds up. But yeah, I mean, if we get to the end of the season and it turns out that Tremaine Edmonds is actually
a player who
was being misused. Tyreek Stevenson was actually a player who was being misused. Dominique Robinson was a player who's, if we get to the end of the season and it's that, then we'll be like, okay, maybe Ryan Poles had a point on some of these guys.
Absolutely.
But yeah, he's got Dom Rob playing. He's got Tremaine Edmonds. They've moved Tremaine Edmonds to Will, and where his athleticism can just take over. And I mean, Edmonds is, this is the best, three-game stretch of his career in Chicago, easily?
Oh, without question. He's looking like he did that last year in Buffalo, finally.
Kevin Byard looks like a fucking ageless wonder. That guy is, he's playing middle field like nobody's business right now. I mean, there's Big Bill. Big Bill is back, baby.
Big Bill's back. He had two games where he looked old and he looked slow and he looked injured, and now he's back to being Big Bill.
Well, and Jervon's looking better. I'll give Dennis Allen credit too. You know, historically he has always done a two gap system with his defensive line and a lot of read and react. And there's still some of that, but I do feel like the last two games, he used the bye he's still doing Dennis Allen stuff on the back end, but the usage of the defensive line has been a lot more one gap and a lot more of the stuff they were doing last year.
Yeah.
And I feel like Jervon looks noticeably more comfortable doing that. And like I said, we're seeing it with Dom Robin. We're seeing it with all these guys, and Big Bill's looking good again. And I felt like you could see how much faith they have in Dom Rob right now because they didn't rush Austin Booker back. He's practiced in full for 2 weeks. They could have activated him, but clearly, just like with Grady Jarrett, I think they saw the field conditions. They were a little worried about guys maybe getting hurt on the wet turf, and so they were like, you know what, we can wait one more week because we like the guys we have. And they were right to. They dominated New Orleans up. New Orleans couldn't run the ball for shit, and they got New Orleans into expected passing situations. And Dennis Allen is just – he's the hobgoblin when you get a guy into third and long. He loves – like – you give him an expect – when Dennis Allen knows you have to throw the ball, you are well and truly fucked, my friend. He absolutely –
Unless Jaquan Brisker slaps a dude in the helmet. Jaquan? Yeah,
God knows.
Like, look, I know it's a stupid penalty, but you really – you know you can't do that.
Yeah, and honestly, speaking of penalties 2 weeks in a row, the Phantom OPI on Loveland this week was actually even more bullshit than the one last week. Oh, my God. I could tell Jeff Joniak was asking Ben Johnson about those penalties and was like, what do you guys do? And Ben was like, yeah, we're talking to the league office to see like how we can coach our guys so that that doesn't happen. But he was saying it in such a way that like, yeah, it's fucking bullshit, isn't it? I'm going to murder someone.
Yeah.
And I get it. Yeah.
Yeah. Other random snap count little bits that I wanted to add in. Dom Rob's snaps all came from Shamar Turner. When Shamar played edge last week, it appears that was a 1 week experiment, and we are done with the Shamar Turner at defensive end.
Oh, really?
Situation. Yep.
Wait, where are you pulling those from?
He basically ate all the. I just went to snap count. Footballguys.com snap count.
That is interesting because I have to admit I didn't watch the All-22 on defense to see where he was lining up. I was looking at PFF, though, and they had him credited. They had all of his snaps against New Orleans as credited at edge.
He played at edge, but Dom Rob took over, like, all of his snap total, essentially.
Oh,
He was on the field for 10 snaps.
Gotcha. Okay.
Shamar Turner. So okay. they've moved him to edge, but he has more taken over the Tano Passagnon. Snaps. He has now disappeared and been cut.
I wonder if Turner will go back to being inactive when they have Grady and Austin. I would bet he is with Grady and Austin Booker. Yeah, because and that's okay. We said when he was drafted, like we weren't expecting anything. We were hoping not to have to use Shamar Turner this year. That is absolutely. But I mean, shit. You see what Dennis Allen is getting out of Dom Rob, and you're like, well, maybe there is something to giving him a year to work with Shamar Turner.
This Shamar stuff really feels like they thought maybe they had Austin Booker last week, maybe they had him the week before, and they haven't, and they're just like, hey, Shamar, right, you gotta play some snaps at end, man.
Yeah.
And then the other one is Colston Loveland getting a lot of snaps, and those appear to be coming from Oz Zacchaeus.
That's what I would like to see happen, yes. Because I know people are like, why don't they play Burden over Zacchaeus more? And the thing is that, like, I don't think – it's frustrating because, don't get me wrong, I am tired of how many targets are being drawn up for Oz in this system. I was the Oz guy. I love Oz. But, like, if anyone remembers the joke I made, I was like, he's a good wide receiver three if you don't have an offense that heavily features your wide receiver three. And they're featuring him way too damn much.
Yeah.
So – but I don't think Burden's ready to take over that role either because it's very specific and the route running has to be very precise. And I love Burden and everything he's shown, but he's not precise yet. And I don't think he's ready to do all that yet.
And not as simple. Wide receivers almost invariably struggle in the NFL. You really don't want to bang.
Well, and again, if you want to make 2022 Lions comparisons, which we've been doing, go back and look at Amon-Ra St. Brown's usage in the first half of that season versus the second half. Like there's a plan. I trust that there's a plan. I don't want to rush there, but I do think, you rework some of those targets to Colston Loveland, who's showing you that he's ready for a bigger role. That third down and seven in the red zone, where one of the few snaps all game where the Saints just played straight up man coverage across the board. Caleb sees it. Loveland sees it. Immediately separates against the safety. Caleb lofts a beautiful ball out there, leads him for the first down. That was exciting. And again, that play was drawn up for Loveland. It's not Rome and it's not DJ that he's looking for there. Third and seven in the red zone. And they're like, yeah, no, Colston's got this. I love that. I know people are freaking out about Tyler Warren. Tyler Warren's doing a great job. I'm not here to say that, oh, it's, but they're different kinds of tight ends. The usage is going to be different. The specific kind of inline tight end and everything that they want Loveland to be is going to take more time. And he's been injured, you know, and that's, I hate when people are like, oh, you got it. You missed two games with the hip thing. And that's, you know, that's neither here nor there. That's not a reason to bag on a guy this early in his career. But yeah, Loveland and with Komet out, he had to make some snaps and they weren't all perfect, but he did some really cool stuff as a run blocker in this game too. So he's going to keep earning more of a role. He's going to keep earning more targets. A lot of exciting stuff there, for sure. A lot of exciting stuff there with the defense.
Yeah, we kind of skipped over it. We talked about Ben Johnson a lot, but we should specifically talk about, you know, part of the reason Caleb had a worse game today is it appears the book on the Bears after the first three or four games, or four games, I should say specifically, was their run game is bad. You know, they can't run the ball, so we don't need to worry about that too much. Let's sell out to stop middle of the field passing. That Ben Johnson offense, Caleb has been doing pretty well over the middle of the field. We'll take that away. We will worry about the pass, and we will allow the run game to be stopped by itself. And Ben Johnson has simply said, all right, we'll fuck you up on the run game. And that's what they've done over the last couple of weeks. Caleb hasn't needed to go out there and go crazy in the pass game. He's looking at, Kyle, I don't think Bears fans have ever seen a team respond to their passing game by like going out and running cover six this much. I don't even know if Bears fans have ever seen cover six on the field against the Bears. And that's just Ben is looking at that. And here's the other thing about Ben. Have we had a coach who has actually won the adjustment game in the way that he has?
Yeah.
Like I think we agree he kind of lost to Flores in that way in week one. But every week since then, by the second quarter, he is coming out. He's adjusting to what he is seeing on defense.
Yeah, and again, for everybody and again, everybody focuses a lot on Caleb, but like Caleb in the second half of this game was 7 of 9, and the second half against the Redskins was like 8 of 12. Or Redskins, sorry, the Commanders.
I'm not bleep the slurs.
Yeah, bleep the slurs. God damn, I'm disappointed in myself there. Against Washington, Caleb was like 8 of 12. The second half against the Raiders, he was dominant. He's been a strong second half passer, which is Caleb settling down. But it's Ben adjusting every time, being like, all right, so this is how you want to play it. Okay, here we go. Just consistently. Consistently good stuff, man. It's just we have one of those guys. We just do. And it's really fucking exciting. And speaking of some guys, we got three guys I want to talk about all together. Travis, we got a trio of running backs. And I said trio because for the second week in a row, folks, we got the singular contractually obligated Roshan Johnson carry. I hope that becomes a gag for the rest of the season. I hope he gets – We got
exactly one
left.
Carry against Washington.
We got
exactly
11
one
left.
Carry against New Orleans.
We got 11 games left. I hope Roshan gets 11 more carries this season, one per game. Just like Sir also
it's so
appearing
funny
in this film.
Roshan. You can't fucking miss him. He's the only guy with the big ass helmet on the Bears. So he goes out there, and I go, oh holy shit, they're gonna give him the one carry,
The best part is they've been two successful runs. Like he powers through, and he's so excited about it. And then
that's right.
Yeah, and then
otherwise, in all seriousness, DeAndre Swift and Kyle Monongai almost even snaps in this game. True DeAndre, thunder and lightning.
DeAndre had, you know, and most of it, I will say, like, it goes looking at the statistics. The Bears had like 3.3 yards per carry before contact in this game, which is an insanely good number.
Yeah.
Most of it is it was just getting what was blocked up for them. There wasn't like a whole lot of crazy stuff going on there, but. There were a couple times where there was one windback play where Swift had to, like, it was a cloudy picture and he cut back and got 5 yards out of nothing. And I was like, look at that.
Yeah.
That's the power of belief right there. That's the power of coaching.
Swifty has been running hard this season, and I'm glad it's been paying off for him.
And I think that's a place where you kind of got to credit Eric Bieniemy because, I mean, what is it? maybe too much in terms of what people said about him, but he's an intense guy. He is a hard running back coach. He holds his guys accountable. And I think that's a place where you got to credit him for really, he's making sure that they are getting DeAndre Swift's best effort every week for sure. That dude is playing hard. But yeah, Menangai, yeah. there was some real juice there in game. He had a couple runs, a couple long gainers, and then I loved his one catch.
He got shifty on a couple of plays.
I loved his one catch where, you know, he caught it in the flat, got hit by a guy immediately. He just shrugged that guy off, gained the first down, and like 4 yards after that, I was like, hell yeah, Kyle.
Yeah, he's been earning those carries. Him and DeAndre are looking great. We talked about a bit the really cool positional coaches we have. Like, you and I are huge Antoine Randall-El fans. Just
love that
ever
man.
Since Holy Indiana God. With Antoine Absolutely. Randall-El since we were but kids.
Absolutely.
But also like JT Barrett at QB coach, Eric Bieniemy at RB coach is like such a it's unfair to have Eric Bieniemy as a running backs coach, like just to have him on staff in such a position, it feels below his stature as a coach, but there he is. And that's definitely a spot where I fear we're going to start losing people because these are guys who are just, they're too good to be where they're at right now. But it's lovely to have them on the staff like this at this point. And they're obviously paying massive dividends. Yeah, I didn't mention Press Taylor, but I'm sure he's doing something.
No. Well, and Al Harris, the defensive backs coach.
Al fucking Harris.
A guy who menaced us in the past. He was a nemesis. I think it was Al. Yeah. Was it Al Harris or was it Mike McKenzie who got it? 2003, Bears had worked their way back. I think they were just barely in playoff contention at 5-7, and they went up to Green Bay. They were actually leading early, and then Cordell Stewart threw a pick six. I want to say it was Al Harris.
Yeah.
Who picked it off to return it to end their to basically end their season officially. So Al Harris, old foe of ours, but man, it was did you see where he literally said they were going to get it four takeaways before the game? He was like, "Yeah, we're going to he's like, I feel four takeaways today." And that's exactly and the only reason they didn't have five was because Nashawn Wright and Byard collided and took Byard's second interception away.
If we could stop eliminating our own players once a game, that would be really cool.
Yeah, because Sweat almost had a fantastic sack of Jaden Daniels last week, and Big Bill fell into his legs and knocked him over, let Jaden escape.
Big Bill, both last week and the week before against Washington, has had plays where he has blown a play up so bad that he has overrun everybody on the opposing team, and he turns around like, oh, shit.
Yeah,
I just threw everybody off of me, and now the running back is gone.
It's really sad that that his teammates let him down against Washington, because that play was so fun. I mean, he's instantly just standing in front of Jaden Daniels, and it's kind of, you know, the and he looks at me, and I look at him, and he looks at me, and I look at him. Yeah. That was the moment, like, him and Jaden Daniels and Big Bill just look. They're just kind of looking at each other, and Jaden's like, you know what I'm going to do right now. And Big Bill is just like, and then Jaden just runs.
He got past me, and Bill just threw his hands up like, what?
Like, what am I supposed 300, to do? Yeah, I'm 330 pounds. What the fuck am I supposed to do here, guys? One of you was supposed to be cleaning up for me right now. Right. Please help.
I can't do this by myself, guys.
Yeah.
Funny anecdotes I really wanted to get out there. Kyler Gordon had one of the most humorous days I've ever seen. Not because he performed poorly. He played very well. But first on a tackle in the first half, he went after a guy for a tackle, realized he didn't want to wrap him up, and simply grabbed him by the hips and ran him out of bounds. But he just like grabbed him by the sides like you might your lover. And then sway with them in the gentle breeze, and he just walked him right out of bounds. That made me guffaw. And then he got a sack, a textbook Kyler Gordon sack. So it's great to see that even across defensive coordinators, Kyler is still an amazing edge rusher. But in order to get it, he just hopped up on Jaden Daniels and became a backpack and just brought him down like a weak man, bringing him down to the ground. Yeah, a Rattler. Yeah, sorry, I'm sorry, I said Jaden Daniels. But he got up on the snake man, and he was just like, you know what? You're going down, buddy.
I will say, here's the thing. Jaden, now I'm doing it. Spencer Rattler.
I'm sorry, I'm fucking everything up.
You got the whole Spencer Rattler experience in that game. And by that, I mean, like, there were some gorgeous throws in there. That the one touchdown pass he threw, the cover two beater seam ball, like that was beautiful. You can't throw it any better than that.
No.
But it was really funny because my film brothers, like, people watch Spencer and he's so easy to seduce you because it's like, man, I don't get it. Spencer Rattler, the arm talent is so great and he's accurate and he's playing on time and he's doing all these things. But I wish they'd let him just cut it loose a little bit more. I wish they'd let him throw it downfield a little bit more. Mm-hmm. You know, he's doing everything right, but the yards per attempt is really low. And then you get a game like that. And it's like, that's why they don't let him do that, guys.
Yeah.
Because going back to Oklahoma, the minute you let him throw downfield, you are asking for all the stupids. Because, I mean, that he has had two games, basically, where because of game script, they had to just throw it and throw it and throw it. Seattle and Chicago. He had 5 turnover-worthy plays against Seattle. He had 6, which that's – I can't remember. I'll have to look. I don't know if I've ever seen 6 in one game before. 6 is a lot, folks. That's a lot. So yeah, I mean there's the limitations of the Spencer Rattler experience. I know I have to quit making so many comparisons, but like Spencer Rattler is very much. I said this when I was watching his South Carolina tape too, because you know he competed, he was getting the shit kicked out of him. He was on a team that had no talent, and he would make several throws a game that you were like, wow, and then he would make several throws a game that you were like, oh my god, what? And it's Jay Cutler, like that guy. He's the most Jay-like guy we have right now. And it's the same thing. Every week, there's so many things you're going to point to and be like, if we could just only get this guy and not that guy, but you're never going to. The confidence that lets him be this guy is what leads to the stupids that makes him that guy. They are one and the same. It's a yin and a yang. You cannot extricate them. So yeah, it was very – the full Rattler experience in that game, very funny, very entertaining.
Yeah, absolutely. So overall – great Bears game. I enjoyed it. I had a hell of a time. We've got the Ravens coming up this week. You and I both hope the Ravens are cautious with Lamar Jackson.
Yeah, I mean, come
let
on,
him rest.
You can't rest the franchise like that. And besides, I feel like Cooper Rush has got this, guys.
Yeah, Cooper Rush will be totally fine against the Dennis Allen defense.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, it's the good thing is I do think, I really hope if Lamar plays, I hope we have Tyreek back. But otherwise, I do think, fortunately, we're going to have a full-strength defensive line to go up against the Ravens, if that's the case. And their offensive line has not been fantastic this year. Now, they will get their left tackle back. That's a huge boost for them. But they've had some leakages elsewhere on the offensive line. Lamar's gotten a little skittish, has run into some sacks this year. So maybe there's some opportunities there. But, you know, at the same time, if Lamar plays, probably going to be a game where you hope Caleb has a clean game for the first time in a couple weeks and really plays well. I expect him to bounce back a little bit. I really do. I think, you know.
It depends what's the book on the Bears at this point, right? At some point, it's a pick your poison. It's just you have to play something in the middle. You can't focus on the run because the pass will gash you. You can't focus on the pass because we're going to run for 250 yards. So,
At some point,
we'll see
if
this is the game.
Yeah, at some point, it all comes together. I don't know if it'll be this week. But, yeah, the Bears, obviously, if, you know, winning 5-game winning streaks are very hard in the NFL. They're going on the road to Baltimore. It's tough. There's a reason the Ravens are favored, assuming Lamar plays. But yeah, the Bears have absolutely got a good shot in this one. Should be hopefully a good game. Hopefully we can keep it rolling. Anything else you want to talk about, Travis?
Yes.
Like Bears wise.
Yeah, it's actually good. We have some extra time here, Kyle. Okay, so maybe about a month ago, I would say, correct me if I'm wrong, but there was Kyle and I, we look around sometimes and we'll see a Reddit post here or there. People ask, "Ooh, what's a good Bears podcast to listen to?" And we don't go in there and like post or anything, but we'll be like, "I wonder if anybody will say us." We had one about a month ago where a lot of people recommended this podcast, right? And we noticed the big spike in viewership, and huge thank you to everybody, but that's not what this is about. That spike in viewership came, and Kyle, when we have a spike in viewership, I usually make you do something to clarify something for people. I didn't do it this time, and we confused some people. anecdotally, some people think that you are a certain Kyle who you're
not.
Oh, God.
Oh, God. Is that... Oh, shit. Is that happening?
Yes. People think I'm actually... I need to clarify that this is not Kyle Orton. I am talking to. This is just Kyle. He happens to be named Kyle. I know it's confusing that okay. the podcast is called Start Kyle.
Did you get like an email or something yeah. about that? Incredible.
Yes. I am now here's the deal. Kyle and now I live near Kyle Orton. We live true. In the same area.
I am
going to find a way to send this email on to Kyle, actual Kyle Orton. It's a very nice email from a person who appreciates Kyle Orton. But this is not that Kyle.
Yeah, it is confusing because I am a guy named Kyle. I live yeah. in Iowa. I did have a neck beard during yeah. a period in the mid-2000s. Obviously, the Bears. My name's not Kyle Orton. It throws a lot of people.
I think we start talking about Des Moines, too, and that's what yeah. really tips people. They're like, well, I know Kyle Orton lives in the Des Moines area.
Yeah, Start Kyle Orton started way back in 2007 as a blog. We just wanted the Bears to go back to Kyle. We were done with Rex Grossman. We were done with Brian Griese. We thought, you know, Kyle never really got a fair chance to play after his rookie year. So it started mm-hmm. as that. And then we just kept the name after the Jay Cutler trade, and it has since faded. It's been my online name for so long now, I don't know how to live without it.
Yeah.
But no, I'm as disappointed as anybody that I'm not Kyle Orton, it's but terrible. I'm not Kyle yeah. Orton.
I will say he is
local here, and I have a theory as to how I might get in touch with him. I have considered reviewing it. I have mm-hmm. considered trying it just to see if we can get in touch with him and see if there's any chance he would ever come on the show, because I think that'd be amazing.
Yeah.
And because I feel like in 17 years, 16 years that I have been tweeting or posting or blogging or podcasting under the handle Start Kyle Orton, at some point when that man has Googled himself, if he's ever Googled himself, he has to have stumbled across us. And I just have to know what that was like for him.
Yeah.
But yes, no, I'm not Kyle Orton. Sure wish I was, but I'm not.
The funny thing is the name has actually evolved over time to mean different things to different
so
people
funny.
As Kyle Orton has
it
moved
was,
around.
It was really fun because after a while there, it was because I was a huge Jay Cutler apologist, and it was really yeah. funny because I'd have Bears fans that would yell at me because they thought that I was anti-Jay and I was yeah. pining for Kyle.
You're right.
And then I had Broncos fans that hated me because they wanted Tim Tebow to start.
Yeah.
And then I had Bills fans that loved me because they were sick of EJ Manuel. I had Cowboys fans that were always unfairly blaming Tony Romo the same way they always unfairly blame Dak for everything that goes wrong. And they were like, they should start Kyle Orton over Romo. I lived through it all. And then Kyle retired, and it's just become kind of a very funny thing. Now it's mostly something people on Twitter are like, why should I listen to you? You clearly thought Kyle Orton was a good quarterback. Yep. It just gets funnier with age, and I refuse to change it. I will never change.
It's only gotten better over time. It's aged like fine wine, but yes,
2035, I'm going to be here, and people are going to be like, who the fuck is Kyle Orton? Like, it'd be like,
yeah.
it'd be like if I had a Start Steve Walsh blog right now, it'll be really funny.
It's exactly like that. But yes, I needed to clarify that. And like I said, to the fellow who sent that very kind email, to Kyle Orton, it's not difficult for us to get that passed on. I know people who go to Southeast Polk. I will find a way to get that.
We'll find
Kyle,
a way to make it happen.
Okay. So yes, need to house clean that. The other thing we need to do, Kyle, the last 2 weeks, we haven't given anybody a quest to get into the Discord.
That's right. Yeah.
If and you the Discord is like going strong.
It's bumping. It's a good time in there. Like any place where Bears fans congregate on game day, where we have the designated game day thread, which is mostly a judgment free zone. As long as you're not being a dick, we let people doom and gloom in there on Sundays. Yep. That's a hilarious place to be. But yeah, the Discord's been going great. If you guys want to get to the Discord, email Travis. It's startkyleorton@gmail.com.
Mm-hmm.
Is it my turn or your turn? What are we going to do?
It's your turn.
My turn. Okay. So if you want the Discord link, you're going to email Travis, and you are going to tell him. You are going to tell him.
Oh, I'm very excited. I should have come prepared with some kind of music. I should have the Jeopardy theme.
What do I
do? Do I still have in my soundboard the swerving with Jervin music? I switch this over.
You're going to tell Travis whether... You're going to tell Travis...
We're going to swerve.
Well, you know, we've been letting it down on the swerving
Yeah. Yeah.
Because I feel like Gervin was, I feel like Gervin was swerving on Sunday, and
he was actually swerving. Yeah. I should play that more. I've got all
yeah,
kinds
we,
of sounds.
I know.
Here.
Yeah, we're really failing on the recurring bits front. Seriously. No, I want you to email Travis, and I want you to explain whether you are a theatrical or extended cut Lord of the Rings person and why.
Oh, this is dangerous.
So email Travis with that, and if your answer is just I've never watched Lord of the Rings, you don't get in the Discord.
This isn't your week. Wait till next week. Never tell us that.
Yeah, we are a bunch of fucking nerds in there, so you're gonna need to figure that out.
Come with cat pictures. Send them to me in the Discord.
One non-Bears related thing I did want to talk about very briefly. I feel like we have criticized this guy a lot. We went through the whole journey with him. Justin Fields got benched by the Jets again, I don't think that was correct. That Justin Fields he's just been bad, and you know I've had to sometimes go in pretty hard on Justin because of Bears fans who won't let him go, just to try to explain why they need to. But one thing I thought was really fucking dickish today, the Jets owner, Woody Johnson, was asked about it and defended Aaron Glenn and was like, well, you don't see a lot of coaches win with when you have a quarterback like that. And so here's the thing. Everyone knows the game. When you're talking about something like that, you just say something like, you use the royal we, and you say, we haven't played good enough. We haven't thrown the football well enough. You don't fucking single out the kid like that. And you especially don't do it. Single out the kid like that in order to defend Aaron Glenn, because guess what? You know why Justin Fields is a New York Jet? Why he was the starting fucking quarterback? It was because of Aaron Glenn. Aaron Glenn wanted him. Aaron Glenn was the one who was like, he always played well against my defenses without realizing what a fucking cell phone that is. And so Aaron Glenn, your shitty ass, cliche throwing, winless, is it Justin Fields' fault that this defensive coordinator, defensive head coach who inherited a defense with Quinnen Williams and Sauce Gardner and everything else can't generate a single fucking turnover? Dennis Allen got four turnovers against Dak Prescott, who's an MVP candidate this year, with a box of scraps. Yeah. And you're going to tell me that Aaron Glenn can't do any better than he's been doing, and you get to throw Justin Fields under the bus like that to protect Aaron Glenn. Hey, Justin deserved to be benched. He's been bad. Mm-hmm. I've got a lot of hilarious statistics putting Justin Fields in historical context. I'm not here to defend Justin Fields at all. You got to do what you got to do. But to throw him under a kid like that, and to me, we're old now, Travis. They're all kids to me.
They are all kids.
Justin's what, 25 still? Like, that's fucking bullshit to do it like that. That's horseshit from Woody Johnson. And also, like, you're Woody Johnson, the owner of the New York fucking Jets. You've screwed up every fucking thing ever under your purview.
What
from everything
you
I've
ever
heard, you're
done
the
right
reason.
To say shit like that.
From everything I've heard, Woody Johnson, and whose family has very close ties to the family that owns JetBlue, which happens to be Zach Wilson's family. From everything I've heard, Woody Johnson played a major role in that particular egregious decision. That's the reason that every failure that they've had over the last 5 years has cascaded from that. So, like, fuck you, man. Leave the kid alone.
Yeah, this
that
very
was
much
some bullshit.
This very much felt like I can make fun of him, but you can't fucking make fun of an asshole kind of situation.
I have not defended Justin Fields on this podcast in 2 years, quite the opposite, but like at the same time, these are human beings. That is a guy who, he's actually got something on the line here, and you're fucking Woody Johnson bailing out your dipshit coach who was the only reason Justin Fields was in that position to begin with. So fuck off.
Just absolutely. Fuck off. Yeah, fuck you,
fuck
Woody Johnson.
Fuck you, Woody. Go fuck yourselves.
All right, do we have anything else we want to say this week?
We'll circle back around to Go Bears.
Hell yeah, go Bears.
Go Bears.
Now you know I'm leaving Chicago, and people that show do hate to go. Now you know I'm leaving.